from high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, everybody, get ready for the latest edition of the Brian Kilmeade Show. The former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, James Tarvitas, will be with us. Author of the fantastic new book, 2054, novel of the next world war. I hope we win. I don't want to give away the ending. Also, Brett Baer is standing by. And, just let me remind you, too, that today the President of the United States is going to have a mini press conference, they say, with the Prime Minister of Japan. That means we get to ask questions. Besides to have someone from Univision whisper something to them, they both had cards. I don't know what was going on yesterday, but they seemed kind of orchestrated. The president did sit down and do a one-on-one interview. So before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
Do you think at this point Prime Minister Netanyahu is more concerned about his political survival than he is in the national interest of his people?
What I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones.
Okay, I think we have the best military with the best intelligence, but we have made mistakes, too. And I don't think Israel called us out. I believe, Mr. President, you blew up a guy putting water bottles in his car and said he was the Abbey Gate bomber. Massive push for Israel to subscribe to a ceasefire and calls coming from a primary ally, us. Why I believe you can open up aid and take apart Hamas in Rafah and do it quickly. And while chance of death to America rise out of Dearborn, Michigan.
Number two.
I went to D.C., where it was fairly easy to access voter registration records. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, 0 Republicans.
That is Yuri Berliner, an NPR editor, who was just being honest, with Barry Weiss on her podcast called Honestly. And she was coming out and saying, between the laptop being real and no one admitting it, between the Russia hoax sowing no actual cooperation with Vladimir Putin and the Trump campaign, and of course everything with the origin of the coronavirus, it was about time the NPR owned up to the fact that they are biased, and he thinks the place has changed. I don't know how long he's going to be hired. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
I can't think of any other time in my lifetime, in history, has occurred that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude. He says he's going to be a dictator on day one. No one doesn't believe him.
He was kidding. And you know that, Joe. Joe speaks. The accusations and misrepresentations of Trump's statements flow freely as abortion rights come front and center as Arizona decides on a total ban dating back to the 1860s, meaning it'll be on the ballot, which will make it even more difficult for Republicans to win Arizona. Brett Baer, chief political anchor for Fox News, an anchor special report. You know that. And Brett's playing in a golf tournament next week. And we're hoping he can talk about this if he chooses the 2024 invited have the Celebrity Classic. They've invited you, Brett. Will you play?
Yes, I will play. This is a great tournament out there in Dallas. And I couldn't play last year, but I'm going back this year, and we'll see how it goes. You know, it's celebrities and Champions Tour players, and so they have a celebrity division, and we'll see the game's up to snuff.
Colin Montgomery, Vijay Singh, you've been compared to both of those five golfers before. Also, John Small. They basically, three of the core of the Atlanta Braves pitching staff, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, Tony Romo, Albert Pujols will all be there, Brian Urlacher. So this is going to be cool. I'll tell you what, the lunchroom is going to be cool. The clubhouse is going to be fun.
Exactly. You know, these guys, they're playing a lot of golf. So, you know, I got to come in there with a good game. But Smoltz, he's awesome. He could be on the senior tour right now. And obviously Romo has played well in Lake Tahoe. So it should be fun. I'll see if I can make the first page of the leaderboard.
I think you will because you're healthy, right? Are you healthy?
I am healthy. I'm good to go.
All right. So let's talk about what's going to be happening this week. Is this the last week for Speaker Johnson? I mean, is Marjorie Taylor Greene going to take him out? This is what she said yesterday, Cut 11.
This is one of the biggest issues in New York. New Yorkers cannot believe what they're dealing with illegal aliens all over the streets of New York. And shame on Chuck Schumer for willing to just be cast these articles of impeachment aside. No, we have to have a trial in the Senate. Mike Johnson should have followed our plan that we talked about, the impeachment managers talked about privately in our meeting, which is to build the case. We were supposed to have weekly press conferences, and all of that has been cast aside. This is Mike Johnson caving again to Chuck Schumer, caving again to what the Democrats want, and this is a betrayal of the American people. Secretary Mayorkas needs to be impeached, and there should be a trial in the Senate.
And he's talking about maybe putting a standalone financing for Ukraine, up to $65 billion. And she says, if he does that, I'm going to have articles to recall him. Eli Crane might join her. I mean, could they go through this embarrassment again?
I think it's possible. It really is possible, and it's hard to believe. But because it's set up like this, that one member can move forward with a motion to vacate, it could happen. Now, the question is, who else has the votes that could get the votes to be speaker if you start this process? That's what happened last time. They started the process, and they didn't have an end to it. And so Speaker Johnson was, you know, number four in the list. I think that he is going to plow forward and take his chances. I think he's probably talking to the Democrats about, you know, the big ticket items they need to get through, FISA reform and Ukraine funding. Israel funding is a little tough in the Democratic side, and but I think he's going to keep going and roll the dice. We could end up in a real pickle like we saw last time.
We'll see what happens. I just don't think anybody could be that stupid after the embarrassment that Matt Gaetz put everybody through and those people that joined him. They're just saying, I don't want to be in the majority. I've never heard of a frustrated majority like this. I've heard a frustrated minority in the House, but I've never seen anything like this. And more people.
Well, I mean, if they keep going, they're going to be in the minority.
So I want to bring you to Gaza. Here's President Biden yesterday calling out Netanyahu. Cut 13.
Do you think at this point Prime Minister Netanyahu is more concerned about his political survival than he is in the national interest of his people?
What I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera.
Okay. I don't know. Was there a baby sleeping next door? Was he told to whisper? I'm not sure. So, Brett, your response, I've never thought an American leader in open forum. I heard about rumors, according to reports, people upset behind the scenes. But we're getting this on camera now. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I there's got to be follow up today at the joint press conference, I would think. It's just amazing the turn that has happened here, and we do not hear about the onus being on Hamas or the American hostages still being held. We don't hear that day to day, and it's everything about how Israel is doing the war, you know, how they're using IDF forces, but you don't hear about the onus being on Hamas, and it's interesting to see that shift.
It's nuts. And then we have this. Who would think after 9/11 we'd ever allow this and not be screaming headline news and condemned by the president? Tariq Bazzi in Dearborn, Michigan, a state the president sees slipping away. Cut 16.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
So they're chanting death to America, and he's done this before. I could play about three or four more clips, and you've probably done it. This guy, Tariq Bazzi, I mean, the press secretary had to be asked to condemn these remarks instead of it coming out. I mean, knowing that we just arrested an 18-year-old who wanted to blow up a synagogue and a church, I mean, aren't we just basically inviting somebody to start militarizing themselves?
Yeah, I mean, you think that this is kind of a green light, but Listen, words matter from the President of the United States. And what he's saying currently on all of this is very, you know, shaded towards the anti-Israel group. And he's, you know, leaning one way. And it's interesting that the administration is trying to tiptoe through the tulips here and say they are supporting Israel but being critical. You can't have it both ways, and I think they're losing on both sides as far as political opinion.
What's your take on the fact that, you know, we have President Zelensky of Ukraine saying, I'm inviting President Trump over, the foreign minister, former Prime Minister David Cameron going to Mar-a-Lago to visit the president? Do you get the sense that overseas they believe the president's got more than a good – the former president's got more than a good shot of being future president?
I think they are hedging their bets. I think they look at it like, you know, 50-50, and they need to be communicating, because not only is the former president, you know, potentially the next president, but he also has a lot of sway in his party up on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. So could make a phone call or two that makes a difference.
So you got a big award, the Horatio Alger Award. What does it mean to you?
It's really an amazing thing. It's a great group of people that goes back decades and decades of it's basically service. And the whole purpose of it is to get scholarships for kids around the country that that may be in bad situations, but they want to hand up. And they've done some 40,000 scholarships. So it's a great organization. I was really honored and kind of surprised to get it. But it was a great ceremony.
It did. Brought you back to Washington?
Yes, yes. I'm here now. I'm here
right
now.
All right, great. So congratulations, Brett. Good luck next week in your tournament. And in the meantime, the world is challenging you every day on Special Report. It's a much watch. Watch at 6 o'clock Eastern time. Brett, thanks so much.
We'll see you, buddy.
All right. And next week he plays golf with a lot of pros. All right. We have a lot more to discuss. I just had a chance to talk to Eric Trump. I'll bring you more of that. The president of the United States, former president of the United States, next week is going to be in court 4 to 6 days, 4 days a week, 6 to 8 weeks. How do you do that and run in a very tight race against Joe Biden? I mean, it is the intent. Nobody thinks this is a strong case. Nobody thinks this is worthy of a former president of the United States breaking precedent to go on trial. Nobody thinks that civil trial was worthy to go put the president through, but they're doing it. A woman walks up from 20 plus years ago and says, Donald Trump did something to me in the 90s. I don't remember quite the year, and gets $83 million. There's so many obstacles going at the former president. Your take on what, how he's taking it and what's it going to do for his candidacy. You are listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country. I've spoken with everyone from the Saudis to the Jordanians, to the Egyptians. They're prepared to move in. They're prepared to move this food in. And I think there's no excuse to not provide for the medical and the food needs of those people. They should be done now.
I mean, does he ever want to balance it out with, we are concerned about weapons getting Hamas. We are concerned that Hamas lives in tunnels while the Palestinians sit above the surface of the earth and are human targets. Are there reports that are in the Washington Times that the Hamas was just assassinating Palestinians to make it look like they were being killed by IDF? Did you also acknowledge how tough the terrain is and maybe even more dense than Fallujah and Ramadi that they dealt with famously in Iraq? Can you possibly balance it out with the war that Israel didn't want, obviously wasn't expecting? And now they're forced to go in, and now they have no choice but to finish off this organization, who said as late as 2 months ago, the next attack we're going to do will be even twice as bad as this one. And this was the slaughter of 1,200 innocent people in a working class area of Israel, right by a border that they thought was secure. Obviously, it wasn't. The president speaking out, desperate to try to get and stop these protests. As president, just stand for the right thing. And if you're going to reprimand the IDF, you do it behind closed doors. Does your Secretary of Defense know how to speak? Do we ever hear from the general who evidently got 4 stars? Here's Senator Tim Scott, Cut 19.
It's just disgusting. Senator Lieberman would be rolling over in his grave. Think about the fact that this administration told Israel on October the 7th, the day of the attacks, to stand down. Think about the fact that it's this administration that approved, green-lighted billions of dollars, $10 billion in November, $6 billion in August, green-lighting more money to actually fund Iranian proxies that are killing and targeting Americans. It's this administration that has allowed daylight between the United States of America and our greatest ally in the Middle East, Israel.
They're talking about 40 hostages for 900 prisoners, Hamas Palestinian prisoners, 100 of which have life sentences, are thought to have Israeli blood on their hands. So they've killed before. 40 for that. Now, there's supposed to be 130. You say you have lost track of some of them, but really 40? I want those, especially if it's my family. I want them out yesterday. I don't want them taken at all, obviously. But to not say that it's a concern about weapons getting to Hamas, to not say it's important for that terrorist organization to be blown out of the water, being ripped out of their caves and their tunnels, cite the embarrassment of the money that went to the Palestinian Authority that Hamas took to build a sophisticated subway system for human beings where people can live, substantive lives down there. And they have pianos. They would have put trucks down there. Did you see some of the ramps from the Egyptian side? I mean, that's what this president, should be at least acknowledging. And finally, before we go, just a couple of things about 2024. Ron Klain came out and said something very similar to David Axelrod. Stop talking about bridges and infrastructure. Get away from the bridge. Start going into grocery stores. Start going into banks, letting people see you do things that they are doing, because right now people think you are out of touch. Stop trumpeting the economy, because prices are now one up from 3.2% inflation to 3.4%. Oil supply is 38% less than it was when Biden took over. And prices are beginning to go up at the pump and in their family homes. And that prices will go up as people start running their air conditioners again. These are some of the fundamentals of the country. And you should understand what people are going through and stop talking about numbers that mean nothing to people. It further gives people the understanding that Donald Trump belongs a double digit with a double digit lead when it comes to the economy, when it comes to leadership around the world. Hey, David Cameron went to visit him over in Mar-a-Lago. That's significant. That's the UK saying, hey, there's a good chance you'll win. Admiral Stavridis next.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you think at this point Prime Minister Netanyahu is more concerned about his political survival than he's in the national interest of his people?
What I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera.
That is outrageous, I think, for a sitting president to not understand what it is like to fight a war in a urban environment and not to have the humility to know that we've made mistakes, too. And I don't remember Israel calling us out and saying, hey, when you blew up that guy who was putting water bottles in his trunk, it's outrageous that you're able to do that. And sadly, I think innocent people have died in Iraq and Afghanistan, too. I don't think our allies were calling us out. I would think there's plenty of other people in the world to do that. I don't think you should use Univision for your political gains. To me, this is about Michigan and Ohio, or Minnesota, I should say. Admiral James Stavridis is 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. His book, 2054, a novel of the next world war, is great. You got to get it. It's just out now. Admiral, I was shocked to see the President of the United States expect outrage on Israel. That stuff should be handled behind closed doors.
I agree. And let's also step back in time a little bit. The absolute worst incident of any one that is similar to this was back in 1988 when I was a young officer in the Navy, and my beloved Navy shot down an Iranian fully loaded civilian jetliner. We killed almost 300 innocent Iranians who were on a pilgrimage to Mecca in the Persian Gulf. The cruiser Vincennes shot it down. And these incidents do happen. They are always tragic. Accountability is necessary, a thorough investigation, transparency. But I agree with you. That kind of criticism best directed behind closed doors.
I just think it makes everyone look bad. It just backs up all the enemies to say that they're actually aiming for it. When civilians are killed, it's a mistake by Israel or by America. When civilians are killed with Hamas, it's the goal. That's what got us into this. Do you think any of these people were armed up? You think they wanted to fight the IDF? No, they wanted to kill people that were watching television.
That's exactly right. And it's very easy to forget how we got here. And the way we got here was a ruthless and implacable terrorist organization, not a nation, not a state, a terrorist organization that launched an attack on babies, on women, and tortured them and mutilated them and raped them, took 250 hostages and went back to hide in their tunnels. So Israel has an imperative to destroy that threat. Now, having said all that, Brian, it is also true that the Israeli Defense Forces, having invaded successfully Gaza, now have an obligation to provide food, medicine, general care. That's warfare 101. The IDF knows that, and the sooner they open the land routes and get more aid in there, the better. Meantime, the United States will supplement by building this pier, which is a good move, but it's really not necessary if the Israelis would open up the spigot of aid to the Gazans. Both those things are true.
Do you think that the Israelis are too worried about weapons getting in there? Is that why?
Yeah, that's the basic rationale, and it's understandable. You know, it's like what the TSA does at the airport, and by the time you're done screening every bag of flour to make sure that there aren't six AK-47s stuffed into it, it takes time. But at this stage, the Israelis, my view, have to accelerate that if that means they need to call up more reservists to do the TSA-like functions on what's going in there, then they should do that. And final thought here, Brian, we've talked about Hamas. The overarching villain here, of course, is Iran. And very credible reporting out today about the flow of weapons that the Iranians are smuggling into Hamas. So we ought to also go after
Hezbollah
Iran
or Hamas
and its supply routes.
Was it
Both is the Iranians are providing more technology to the Hezbollah. You're absolutely right, up to the north, but they are also sending weapons into Hamas, smuggling them into Gaza right now.
I want you to hear what President Biden's recommending through Univision. Cut 14.
So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country. I've spoken with everyone from the Saudis to the Jordanians to the Egyptians. They're prepared to move in. They're prepared to move this food in. And I think there's no excuse to not provide for the medical and the food needs of those people. They should be done now.
Now, does he know the downside is that Hamas rearms or they get out to never fight another day or to fight a year from now? I mean, can he at least point that out, that there's got to be some control over the fighters who are waiting in tunnels below while their human sacrifices are up top to Palestinian people?
I agree completely that the center of gravity here, the military center of gravity, is that tunnel complex, 400 miles of tunnels. The Israeli Defense Forces are going to have to decommission those tunnels, flood them, explode them, seal them off. And the good news is the civilians are not down in those tunnels. So if I were advising the IDF, I would say go after the tunnel complex up on the surface, increase the amount of aid. You've got to continue to try and seal off weapons, resupply options. In terms of a ceasefire, I think that at this stage, a six-week ceasefire makes sense, and makes sense from an Israeli perspective. They are largely, as you know, Brian, a reserve army. They have called up hundreds of thousands of reserves. They need to rest, refresh, and cycle those reservist forces. So there's some military benefit to Israel as well. Having said all that, the downside, you are correct, is that it will afford Hamas opportunities as well. But when I put it all together, I think a six-week ceasefire makes sense. That's why Bill Burns, Ambassador Bill Burns, the head of the CIA, is working very hard to deliver that, but to do it in a way that allows Israel to maintain a reasonable control of the military situation, even during the ceasefire.
So Christopher Wray spoke yesterday, the head of the FBI, and he said China and the country's country's cyber team and physical threats are all pointed towards the U.S. He was speaking to the American Bar Association. Yeah. He says there's been ringing warning bells about China for months, both in personal statements and congressional testimony. Front and center is China, the defining threat of our generation. Quote, to put it simply, the CCP is throwing its whole government at undermining the security and economy of the rule of law in this world, the rule of law world. And also factor in Lavrov met with his counterpart yesterday in China, deepening ties and looking to confront us and other democracies every way they can.
I would add Russia to his statements, and I'm in complete agreement with Director Wray, who has been a clear voice on the risks of cybersecurity. And you know what's coming right behind that, Brian, is artificial intelligence. It's already being implemented using cybersecurity and cyber tools offensively to manipulate our security, go after our financial institutions, go after our intellectual property, and try to influence our elections. I think that China is the bigger concern at this moment than Russia, and FBI is right to highlight this, and we need a strong interagency effort, not just the FBI, but the entire cybersecurity apparatus across government needs to work together more effectively to prevent the kind of threat that Director Wray is pointing out to us.
It would help our economy and would help our security if we did one thing, and that is rapidly expand our military industrial base and begin to sell to countries that can pay, in many cases, like Japan, like South Korea, like
Taiwan,
the Philippines, like Taiwan, who's waiting patiently for the weapons they ordered. Lithuania, Estonia can get whatever they can do. They want to modernize their weaponry. We would make money on this and benefit from this, and we would send a great message that Western democracies aren't coming apart and they're not rolling over, they're coming together. How do you feel about that? Can that be done?
Yes, it can. And by the way, I'm going to add another country to the list, which is Ukraine. And I get it. Ukraine can't afford to buy those weapons. But here's a newsflash. The money that would be allocated to Ukraine, the $60 billion that I think Speaker Johnson is going to get through the House in the next week or two, that $60 billion, almost all of it comes right back to the United States, to our defense industrial base, and helps pump it up. So we have got pressing needs to protect democracy, all around Asia, and you correctly point out the team out there. I'd just add Singapore, Australia to those that you mentioned. And over in Europe, we've got a clear use case, a need case in Ukraine. Both of those matter. Both of those will help our defense industrial base. It makes all the sense in the world.
And that would help us win the war you talk about in 2054, wouldn't it, in your book?
Exactly. A lot of the analysis, the research, the development would go into that industrial base and be focused on cybersecurity, unmanned vehicles, artificial intelligence. Those are the looming towers of our time. And in the book 2054, we explore all that. But doing it now would prepare us for 2054.
Admiral James Servetus, congratulations on the book. Go out and pick it up. And thanks so much for your insight.
Thanks, Brian. Talk soon.
Admiral Servetus, listen, we come back. I have some time to get some calls. I also want you to hear from the head of NPR, one of the leading editors of the NPR for the past 25 years. He backs up everything we've been talking about on this show. You'll love it. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. And it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch.
So that was Yuri Berliner, the NPI editor. He's speaking to Barry Weiss after he wrote a column on the Free Press. And he said, we got it wrong. We got a lot wrong. And we didn't admit it. And it's just, he found it so bizarre. And I think, in my view, after listening and reading this, I think he wants it to change. But this is the stuff that we've been saying. 51 intel agents say the laptop is classic Russian disinformation. Laptop was real. It was real emails, real exchanges with President Biden, then Vice President Biden, then unemployed President Biden. Everything was real about it. The pictures, everything was. It wasn't Russia's disinformation. No one ever owned up to it. They just said, oh, yeah, it is real. But they wanted to save the election. Cut 22.
After a while, we started covering Trump in a way that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents or evidence. It wasn't really solid. But I think it was compelling.
It's compelling, and it wasn't true. And in the Free Press, he says, NPR, for the last 25 years, is the place, he says, where he is called home, has lost America's trust. So even if you're a Democrat, knowing that you weren't telling the truth about the Republicans, why would you even trust what they're saying about your side? Because they're blowing them up. I mean, this is the same mindset that says Ronna McDaniel is not worthy of being at NBC. It's the same mindset that cuts CNN and MSNBC, keeps cutting out of President Trump's speeches because they don't feel as though he's saying facts like they know them. You know, Trump exaggerates everything. Plus, when you do a speech in front of a rally, you make things extreme. You say, I'm going to win, and this is the biggest, this is the best, it's never been worse. You talk in extremes, you get people riled up, and now they're bowing out. This is the same attitude. Well, for this guy, Yuri Berliner, a 25-year editor at NPR, it's not okay because he knows there's an excellent chance Trump will be president again, and he'd like to see it change. Cut 24.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration among our staff. I found that I looked at D.C., where it was fairly easy to access voter registration records. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, 0 Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting, and I said, hey, look, something's gone wrong here. Where, you know, if we're really thinking about diversity and our coverage, like something is really off.
Right. This is the same attitude the New York Times. when the editor of the editorial section said, Tom Cotton, I hear you want to use the military against these protesters in 2020. They're taking over the cities. They're burning things down. They're looting stores. And you say we should use the military. Would you write a column about that with your point of view? The guy got fired. Isn't that crazy? I don't even know. Did you, Allison, you remember, did they ever publish it? I don't even know. Yeah, I think they did publish it and he got fired after the reaction. No one could believe they put in Tom Cotton's column. Do you remember that?
I think they did publish it.
They did. Okay, so it got in. So this is, and what I think is important to point out is I don't even care about the diversity of views. So when it comes to the opinion section at NPR, I don't listen that much, but it's publicly financed to a degree, to mostly, and a lot of people listen around the world. And if you want to have your opinion people all be the left, that's not the problem. You have to report stories. I mean, with George Bush, you might not have liked the war and you might have thought Al Gore won the election. And they were definitely tilted to the left. But I still got the stories where, you know, his approval ratings at 53%. That was a great speech down at 9/11. Fantastic inaugural address. I didn't like this. But, so you got a sense of it. But according to all these outlets, Donald Trump has never done anything right. And they never gave him credit for winning 2016 election until 2020 when they said he will not admit that he lost this one. So for this person who I will never meet to point out that the laptop was real, the Russian collusion never took place, the pandemic was started in a lab in China, and even if it wasn't, it's certainly worth it of the discussion and a distinct possibility. Let alone the impeachment. I mean, my goodness. This guy's, my hope it's he wrote this to change things. My sense, he's going to retire, air quotes, shortly. Hey, I'll talk about this April 27th in Henderson, Nevada. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for History, Liberty, and Laughs live stage show. Be there. Better than Hamilton.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, which I was just told by the mayor is the safest big city in the world. Really? Did you tell the cops on the Upper East Side they got beat up by five Venezuelan illegal immigrants who were shoplifting at Target and didn't want to be stopped? Should we have mentioned that the two cops who were beat up in Times Square? Can I mention the 67,000 illegals that are here right now, many of which brag that they're gangsters? Please. John Lonsdale is going to be with us shortly, senior AVC managing partner, Plantier co-founder. Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to get to him. We'll talk about the economy and everything else and how we should think America first when it comes to investing. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Do you think at this point Prime Minister Netanyahu is more concerned about his political survival than he's in the national interest of his people?
What I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones.
That is President Biden calling out our chief ally. Massive push for Israel to subscribe to a ceasefire and calls coming from its primary ally, us, for them to stop fighting and take the blame. Why I believe you can open up aid and take apart Hamas in Rafah right away, while chance of death to America, may I add, rise from Dearborn, Michigan.
Number two.
I lived in D.C., where it was fairly easy to access voter registration records. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, zero Republicans.
That is Yuri Berliner of NPR. He is giving us confirmation. The bias that we've been citing and speaking about, confirmed by the bastion of left-wing thought, NPR. An editor speaks out about the issues that have been fueling this network and this show. The COVID origins, the Russian hoax, the Hunter laptop. Will this admission bring change?
Number one.
I can't think of any other time in my lifetime, in history has occurred, that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude. He says he's going to be a dictator on day one. No one doesn't believe him.
he was kidding with Sean Hannity. Joe speaks. The accusations and misrepresentation of Trump's statements flow freely as abortion rights come front and center as Arizona turns back the clock to their abortion stance in 1860, which was a total ban. Republicans got their hands full with this one. Joe Lonsdale joins us now, 8VC managing partner, longtime successful business person. Joe, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian.
Hey, Joe, what, our economy right now, I just want to get your rough take. It looks as though, according to the new numbers, inflation is now going up to 3.6%. We also have a situation where oil production is off 38% of where Joe Biden did picked up after he got the job. And we also know that the prices of gas and oil is going up at this point. That's going to matter for this election, isn't it?
It's definitely going to matter. I mean, listen, they're obviously juicing things. They're printing a ton of money. The debt deficit's skyrocketing. It's really scary watching that chart. If you look at it, it's a big problem. I think they're going to juice things through the election, hoping inflation doesn't pick up too much, but everything looks good, and it's going to be a mess afterwards.
So right now, what do you think our focus should be? Individual investor.
Focus on the investing side. Well, listen, America is still the center of global innovation. People are looking to us as the best place in the world to build innovative new companies. And there's a lot of stuff going on with AI that's real. It's not fake. And it's, I hate a lot of big tech stuff. A lot of big tech stuff is corrupt. You probably saw the news this week. Those guys, they all just went along with the crazy Brazilian guy and center whatever they want. But, the smaller tech's not corrupt. It's not politicized. We're still the best in the world for innovation. That's where we should be investing.
Would you say about Brazil?
Do you see the Supreme Court justice there told every social media company, you have to censor yourself. You have to get rid of my political opponents off your platform. You have to say it's because they violate your terms of service. And every one of them did it except for Elon. Elon said, no way, this is wrong. I'm not going to do it. So now they're investigating him, defining him. It should be the biggest story of the week by far for me. All these wimps running our big tech companies going along with whatever a dictator wants inappropriately, lying for him. The only Elon stood up to him. It's craziness.
Well, it's craziness too, but China just did the one better. They just kicked everybody out.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, listen, China, the CCP is our biggest adversary in the world. They're extremely corrupt. They're actual communists. They couldn't have convinced me they were communists 15 years ago. I would have thought you were tricking me. How could we be dumb enough to try to go back to that after all the people who died there? And yet they have communists in charge again. It's a very scary place.
So when you look at what's happened with the press, I thought this was pretty significant. Yuri Berliner came out and he just said, look, for the last 25, he's been here for 25 years. He has never seen the bias so bad within his own organization. And when he talked about the pandemic, when he talked about Russia hoax, when he talked about the origins of where the virus came from. And then when he talked about the 51 Intel agents, it all swore that Hunter Biden's laptop was classic Russian disinformation. Cut 23.
And for us, I think a lot of newspapers, use documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly, a lot. I think I counted 25 times. And in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, Russia, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, I think we sort of went the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Mm. Despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
Do you notice that people that said some of the things that he's now coming out with, Wilked as nuts, conspiracy theorists, fringe people that are hurting the country, and how that changed?
It's very strange. I think he said earlier it's 87-0. You were saying on the left to right in terms of people in these companies. It's very strange the amount of which everything's become propaganda recently, and which people are not willing to be self-critical, not willing to admit mistakes. And the media seems to be just one of the most broken parts of our society right now, and it really scares a lot of us watching this.
How do you feel as though investing could be looking out for our country's interests while still looking out for profit?
Well, definitely. I mean, that was the example I was giving with X standing up to censorship, because that's our country's interest, and it makes it harder if you stand up because the world people all go after you. But it's the right thing to do. It's the same thing with a lot of defense stuff right now we're trying to do. I built a few of the important new defense companies in the U.S., and unfortunately, a lot of our defense primes have become like government agencies and have not been able to innovate, not been able to stay ahead of our adversaries the same way they could 30 years ago. And so one of our duties as technologists is let's get the best and brightest, and let's fight to keep America strong. And listen, Brian, those are actually the functional parts of our countries. When you get these innovators together, you get the young superstars, you get people working really hard on these things, and you actually, you know, can outperform our current big defense primes by 10x in a bunch of areas and grow fast. And so there's still really good bright spots in our country when we can get people together and innovate. And that's what we got to be doing.
How do we do that and recognize and finally recognize that China is our enemy? We're not competing with them. They're trying to destroy us. And how should we react? How should investors react? Can you react patriotically?
Yeah, we should stop giving them asymmetric access to our country. We should stop backing China. We should, you know, TikTok needs to be taken out of CCP hands. It's obviously insane to have the CCP control TikTok, right? As investors, like, let's find things in defense. Let's find things that bring talent to America, make America strong. There's nothing wrong with working with everyone else around the world. I'm not a nativist. Like, there's great talent all over the world, but these people all want to come here. So the way we do it is we invest in the best and brightest. We let them come here, and we partner, and we don't, you know, we don't offshore things to China.
Where does AI fit into this?
AI is working, right? So you can talk to the best and brightest running big companies. This is usually improving their productivity. The way we all get wealthier is we do more with less, and you're augmenting like the very best programmers are becoming better with AI. You're augmenting your call centers require a lot less people to do a lot better job. There's all sorts of things all across the board. You know, healthcare billing sounds like a boring area. Over $200 billion a year spent on it. That's going to get a few times more productive. You're going to be able to pull $100 billion of waste out of that area. There's so many areas like this. It's really good for the economy with AI. So we got it. The big question with AI is, are we going to be like Europe and regulate ourselves and not allow it to create more wealth? Or are we going to decelerate? Or are we going to be, you know, the true American, we're going to let it accelerate? So it's a real question around like how we want to see our future. Do we want to be a free country, or do we want to overregulate ourselves or break everything?
But Joe, I get the sense that really smart people like Elon Musk are saying, look, guys, you don't understand how dangerous this could be. What is the best way forward knowing that?
You know, there's really two separate conversations. One conversation is, what about it? How do you use it for business? How do you use it to create wealth? How do you use it to create prosperity? What are the rules along those lines? And that's one area where we debate things. The second area is AI going to get to the point where we're, you know, it's almost like our society has gone through all these different eras where we believe in some messianic complex, right, where we believe the Messiah is coming. It's a natural thing we've done in America four or five times, and this is like a secular version of the messianic complex. Are we creating a new God? Is this going to fundamentally change reality and be 100 times smarter than us and everything is different? And I think that messianic conversation is a fascinating one, but I think it's separate than the business one, because if it is possible to create new gods with this tech, we're probably not going to be able to stop that anyway, if that's possible. I don't think it's likely. I think it's a little bit, you know, I respect Elon in a lot of areas. I don't think he's necessarily right about this one. If it is possible, I'd rather we create it before China. I'll tell you that.
Right. Do you think, Jamie Dimon has come out and says, you know, we slept while China boasted their economy. So how should we adjust? How do I tell a J.P. Morgan, you got to think twice? How do you tell a Dalio that, you know what, you got to pull back and remember what country you're from? How do you do that in a free market economy?
Well, listen, I think there's guys like Dalio who are probably lost. I think he's been very close to Chinese leadership for a long time, and I think it's not clear which side people like him are on, and that's the decision they've made. And, you know, I think it's a shame. But for America, the way we're set up right now is that we should make the rules really clear. We should stop giving them asymmetric access. If we can't sell something in their economy, if we can't build something in their economy, they shouldn't be able to do it here. And we need to. And you know what? Everyone who has family in China right now, those family are used against them to weaponize them. So the people here, unfortunately, who have family in China should not be allowed sensitive information in our defense or any area of IP that can be stolen. And that's just the way it is, unfortunately, because CCP has shown that they will use torture if necessary to force people with family there to reveal things. And so we just got to be smart about this and wake up and change some rules.
Well, you know what blows me away is TikTok in particular. You got people like Trent Lott and others who are lobbying to keep TikTok free and let them be Chinese owned and pretend this Texas project is going to be the answer when it's not the answer, because by law in China, you are a tech company. You have to have full access to the government. And there's a member of this Chinese Communist Party working for the government that is a member of the board there.
The Texas thing is such a fake thing that they're doing. It doesn't matter if some of the data is there. If they control the algorithms, if they get to decide, you know, which things are censored, which things are banned, anything against China is going to be banned. Things that are against the U.S. are going to be spread more quickly. If they have that control, which they do, it's completely unacceptable. And it's basically being a traitor to lobby for TikTok right now. I am furious at these people doing it. It's a fake free speech issue. It's not a free speech issue. It's an adversary that is controlling what 100 million plus people here see. And it's distorting and censoring in a way that helps China. Totally unacceptable. I'm really proud the House got it done. The Senate better get it done. We approve for a functional country. We got to get this out of our adversary's hands. It's just not acceptable.
So how's your college going?
University of Austin is going great. Our first class is going to be, we're going to have 100 students. We're getting a lot of kids to turn down top schools to come there. Hopefully going to train some of these young people to be courageous, bold individuals to stand up for these sorts of things. And, you know, Neil Ferguson, Barry Weiss, my co-founder, is working hard on it. Pono Canales, the president, is doing good work. So it's going really, really well. And we're excited to have the first undergraduate class, the founding class. Kids are still applying right now. I've had, you know, several hundred applicants, I think over 1,000 applicants actually now. And we're getting some really good students.
So it's the University of Austin?
University of Austin.
Nice.
UAustin.org. Great new school.
So, Joe, if people want to follow you, what you're investing in, which is Think America First, they go to blog.joelonsdale.com?
That's right. You can do that. I'm on Twitter at JT Lonsdale, and we're going to keep fighting for America.
All right. Joe, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the economy as you see it. And what about the advice that Ron Klain just gave the president? Very similar to what David Axelrod said earlier. Essentially, you got a bad team around you. Adjust your game plan.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Okay, so it's 25.39 for 40 piece nuggets and two large fries. You couldn't even throw in the Sprite. You couldn't even throw in like a medium Sprite in there. Holy crap.
So there you go. A customer goes in the drive through and it costs, how much did you say it was costing her?
$25.39
without a drink.
Correct.
Why? Because the workers are now getting $20 an hour. That's not built. That's not the model. That's not the model that works for McDonald's. It's been one of the thriving companies in America. You go there for fast food, but it's also affordable food. What is Gavin Newsom thinking about?
Well, that is true. However, but I will say it's not the employee's fault that she's not giving her a drink. I mean, that is what McDonald's set there. The other thing, here's a tip for everyone out there. Josh gave this to me today. If you have the McDonald's app, you get different deals. You get some legitimate deals, not when you're in Manhattan.
What, you mean you order it? And then it's waiting for you, and it's less.
Josh can speak to it better than I can.
The only way you'll get any sort of buy one, get one free is if you use the app. If you go to the store and don't use the app, you're not going to get a deal.
Right. Any state. We're just in California.
Yeah, any state.
So that's what they did. It's a fast food rule, unless you bake bread. That's what they're doing in California. So people are upset about it. Now all of a sudden they go, okay, you know what? I didn't have time to make food in the morning. I can't burn my lunch every day. I'm out of tinfoil. I don't want to do it. No place to put it. It's going to be hot in my office. Don't have a refrigerator. Don't want to let people at work steal it from me. Or you just don't have a place to put it. You're one of those jobs you're always on the road. You like to be able to pull up and just get something to eat. Now, all of a sudden, you have to reevaluate. And if you're in New York City, we're the first ever to have congestion pricing. Now, if you are going through the heart of the city, which most people do sometimes just to cut through, $15 in, $15 out, along with the fact that you're already paying for a bridge and tunnel. You don't think that's going to factor in? Now, if you're a firefighter, you're making $70,000 a year, and now you're adding $30 a day, 5-6 days a week. How do you feel about that? You just got a huge pay hit. And then when the left-wing legislature goes to meet about exempting firefighters and cops, they say no. when the left-wing legislators goes to meet about getting a bail reform where you actually give bail to people, offer bail to people who are committing more serious crimes, they say no. So it's a lot of frustration. Lawmakers affecting everyone's lives without getting their input first. And you heard the numbers I brought up. Right now, the average price, if you think things are going down, they're not. They were, I know it was as high as 8% inflation. Now it's gone from 3.2 to 3.4. Oil supply 38% less than when Biden took office in terms of drilling, and he stopped all drilling for natural gas. Don't know why. And the price of all energy is going up. So intentionally hurting our economy. That's why the first thing I say when people have talked about things now, and oh, they're so bad. This is so fixable. You let people drill responsibly. You know, you go out and stop printing money. You understand, too, the more work you put in, the more the quicker we can get inflation down, the quicker interest rates can come down, because the only way to bring them down is to raise rates up. And as soon as it becomes clear that rates aren't going to come down, the stock market will begin to come down, too. So people are going to adjust that way. Listen, Rich Larry's going to bring us inside the Republican race. You know, right now, it looks like the Biden team is going to get him out more and more, not to do interviews. Of note, interviews to shore up his base. What's Trump's answer going to be? And what happens if Marjorie Taylor Greene goes ahead and oust Speaker Johnson? One of the worst things could happen to Republicans, but it could happen. Rich Lowry on that.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is one of the biggest issues in New York. New Yorkers cannot believe what they're dealing with illegal aliens all over the streets of New York. And shame on Chuck Schumer for willing to just be cast these articles of impeachment aside. No, we have to have a trial in the Senate. Mike Johnson should have followed our plan that we talked about, the impeachment managers talked about privately in our meeting, which is to build the case. We were supposed to have weekly press conferences, and all of that has been cast aside. This is Mike Johnson caving again to Chuck Schumer, caving again to what the Democrats want, and this is a betrayal of the American people. Secretary Mayorkas needs to be impeached, and there should be a trial in the Senate.
Yeah, to be a trial. A couple of things. You talked about New York. Guess what? With New Yorkers running wild, Venezuelan gangsters beating up cops in outside Target, you know who goes to jail? The former CFO of the Trump Organization, 76-year-old Weisenberg, because they say he perjured himself on the stand, which they can't even prove. So they say he's on probation. He goes to jail for 6 months. They're just trying to keep him out of the trial that starts next week. And my hope is he can get out of prison or testify from there to show nothing's wrong. And according to some source very close to the Trump family, if he had come out and said anything bad against Trump, he would have not spent one day in jail. But he wouldn't do it because it's not true. With me right now is Rich Lowry. It is crazy world, Rich. It's your, the editor of the National Review. You wrote your latest column, Marjorie Taylor Greene's lunatic case to oust Speaker Johnson. But what about Weisenberg? Well, watching him walk to Rikers Island.
Oh, yeah. It's outrageous. That guy, the way he's been treated, has been shameful. If he worked for any other company, it wouldn't have happened. And that's you know, a key part of all these Trump legal cases. You know, did he exaggerate the numbers? Yeah. Does pretty much everyone exaggerate the number? Yeah. Would Trump have been prosecuted if his name was something else, Smith? No. So it's just wrong. And the New York legal system obviously is a disaster for Trump, and that's why you got to assume he's going to get convicted in this ridiculous Alvin Bragg case.
Yeah, and it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks. I'm sitting there in the courtroom 8 to 10 hours a day. How do you run for president and do that and know potentially there's three more cases staring right at you? So it's incredible what he's been asked to overcome. You might say he has coming to him, not on the civil case and not on this case. Either one of the New York cases, to me, is a total – it's a total scam.
And yeah, they're shams. And even if he gets acquitted, let's say, just sitting there for 6 to 8 weeks – The most precious commodity in any political campaign, especially presidential campaign, anyone will tell you, is the candidate's time. So even if nothing else happens, even if he didn't have to spend on the legal fees, again, even if he's not convicted, just having him sitting in a room not campaigning is a huge benefit to the Biden campaign. And everyone's aware of this. You know, if they all thought, you know what, if we prosecute Trump, it's going to help him, and he's going to win the election against Joe Biden. All these cases would disappear, right? They think it's going to hurt him, and even if, you know, his polling doesn't collapse, and I don't think it will, it obviously at a certain level has in terms of time and resources.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. So you wrote about the idiocy of Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to recall Mike Johnson because he's going to potentially put a standalone aid when it comes to Ukraine on the floor without border money.
Yeah, so look, I agree with everything she says about the border and how disgraceful Mayorkas is, but none of this is Mike Johnson's fault, right? It was totally predictable when they shot Kevin McCarthy in the back of the head. Whoever replaced him would do basically the same things because it's not, you know, it wasn't Kevin McCarthy's choice. He had a very narrow majority, one chamber of the Congress with Republicans, Democrats holding the Senate and Joe Biden being president. So just limits to what you can do. So the idea that Kevin McCarthy or Mike Johnson can wave a wand and give Marjorie Taylor Greene everything she wants is just, it's false. It's ridiculous. And to take him out, we'll see what happens. But to take him out and have more chaos is just going to really hurt Republicans politically. And they have a narrow majority they need to hold, right? It's really important that they hold this in November, and chaos doesn't help.
By the way, yeah, if Trump does win and he loses the House, they're going to just start impeachment right away.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So Tim Burchett, who famously helped take down Kevin McCarthy, said this, cut 12.
Do you think that there's any chance that Marjorie Taylor Greene is successful in unseating the Speaker the next couple of weeks here?
I think it's a possibility. But I think if she does, she gives the game to gavel, because, I mean, let's just look at numbers.
You think if the minority, if the majority was so this tight back last year, that you would have considered making a different decision if it was so close and you were more worried that
Jeffries could take the gavel? I never thought about it, because we knew within shadow of a doubt that we would have a Republican Speaker.
Yeah, and you can't say that anymore.
No. Cannot.
So those are the idiots that thought it would be a great idea, led by Matt Gaetz, the genius, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who did not jump on the bandwagon last time, mm-hmm. stood by Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, she's with him.
As did Chip Roy and others. Say, listen, he's in a tough spot. We'll see. We'll get it down the line, and said they get rid of him. And then for a month, we had no speaker and nothing got done. And they still have not recovered. They're doing everything to show the American people they don't want the majority.
Yeah, and, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene in an interview the other day said Johnson's always says he's tired, and that's because this is an extremely difficult job. And this is something that Kevin McCarthy is not a normal guy, and that he enjoyed this job. Right? He enjoyed fundraising. He enjoyed the tightrope of the legislative tactics, and most people don't, which is another reason why you should have left him. Now, that's water under the bridge, and I wish Johnson the best, but it makes no sense to depose him, and I think he should bring the Ukraine bill up. You know, do everything you can to kind of placate the criticisms you've heard and the ideas you've heard. Do it as a loan. You know, just strip it down and just do the weapons. Do all that, but then put it on the floor. I mean, there's a bipartisan majority to pass it in the House and the Senate, and it would be really stupid to lose a war because Mike Johnson's scared of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I would think so. You would think that Ronald Reagan, all I say to her, you guys all look up to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, I wish we had a Ronald Reagan. Well, Ronald Reagan would have given him everything they needed to be successful. Attack-ems on down. Would have dared him to up the ante. There's no doubt he would have backed Ukraine. So I just want to talk about something else that I know you're passionate about. For the longest time, we sat there and we said we could not believe that you really think the Hunter laptop wasn't real. We mm-hmm. really, did you really believe that the coronavirus did not come from a lab? You've shadow banned me because I wrote that maybe there might be a downside to the vaccine. And then when you have a situation where the Russian hoax is dispelled, you never admit to it. Among the people that are outraged that they were doing just that at NPR is the current editor at NPR, Yuri Berliner. And this is what he told Barry Weiss. Cut 21.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. And it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch.
And he went on. Cut 22.
After a while, we started covering Trump in a way that, that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents or evidence. It wasn't really solid, but I think it was compelling.
So he talked about latching their train to Adam Schiff and everything Adam Schiff said. He was on 25 times, nobody on the other side. And then when it was proved disproven, they never said anything. I'm not reading the National Review and reading an editorial. This is the head. This is NPR editor Yuri Berliner. So what does this tell you?
It's extraordinary that he's speaking out in this way. Just unbelievable. So congratulations to Barry Weiss in getting this, and for him for speaking the truth. And he obviously must have been really bothered by this to go and do this. It's not telling us anything we didn't know, but it's still amazing to hear it from an insider like that. And clearly, I mean, this is what happened. They hated Trump. They're shocked by it. They couldn't control their emotions and their ideological predilections, and it distorted everything they did and corrupted the mission of journalism that they're all supposed to believe in. And good for him for speaking out about it.
Right. I think the main reason why I think he's doing it, number one, he's got enough money in his 401k because I don't know how much longer he's going to have a job. But number two, I think that he thinks that Trump's got a great shot at winning. And he's trying to say, are we going to do this again?
Yeah.
Don't you understand that it's hurting the country? It doesn't matter what party you're in. He's most likely a Democrat. Do you understand that by saying that everything he says is crazy, by taking him out of context and saying he's going to ruin democracy, knowing that he's lined up to either get very close or take the White House, are we going to wise up? And by the MSNBC firing Ronna McDaniel, by CNN cutting away from his speeches, I believe they're on track to do the same thing. What about you?
They're going to do exactly the same thing, and they're going to do it more so. I mean, it's going to be the opposite of the lesson, if you're right, that he wants them to learn. The argument is going to be, we really screwed it up because we let him be elected. You know, how could this have happened? And we need to be even harsher to try to blight his presidency. So I think this cause, it's great to hear from him. It's really important for us to point it out, but it's kind of hopeless. They're going to do what they're going to do, and it's going to be worse than 2017.
All right. Lastly, I just want to end. This just reminded me of what Jamie Dimon said last month when asked, a couple of months ago, when asked about the Trump era and will there be another and what people should keep in mind. Cut 28.
I wish the Democrats would think a little more carefully when they talk about MAGA, and they're basically scapegoating them, that you are like him. And if you look, just take a step back, be honest. He's kind of right about NATO, kind of right about immigration. He grew the economy quite well.
China virus tax
reform worked. Mm-hmm. He was right about some of China, but he wasn't wrong about some of these critical issues. And that's why they're voting for him. This negative talk about MAGA is going to hurt Biden's election campaign.
And they didn't listen, but Jamie Dimon was right to this point.
Yeah, and look, what he said about Trump's first term, this is why Trump has a good chance of winning again, is that's how most people feel. And I don't really like the guy. Yeah, but he had a point about China, and the economy was growing, and the border was better, and all that. So that's just a huge hurdle for Biden. And I don't think substantively there's any way for him to overcome it now, to kind of make the substantive case for what he's done and how it's better than Trump. I mean, just people are going to have their own beliefs about this because it's their real-life lived experience. So that's why they got to do the MAGA thing. They got to do the threat to democracy thing. They got to do the abortion thing, you know, where that's something where they will get some traction and double down on all of that and hope it's enough to overcome what people think of Trump's substantive record.
Rich Lowry, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, Rich Lowry, National Review. At this point, the thing that's different, that what I always ask people, it's not even worth predicting who's going to win. It's way too far out, number one. But number two, the court cases. Rich Lowry brought it up. The thing you have most valuable, you have your time. And they're going to try to take that away from them. 6 to 8 weeks. Let's hope this is the only trial. And can you imagine if somebody in New York is honest and fair and says, yeah, not guilty? Can you imagine that? You are listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'll grab some calls when you get back, 1-866-408-7669. Before I go, just a reminder, it's coming up soon, April 27th, believe it or not. It's Saturday night, Henderson, Nevada. I'm going to be on doing History, Liberty, and Laughs on stage. It is fun. It's entertaining. It's exciting. It's patriotic, motivational, inspirational. And it's my chance to go out to the West Coast. It's going to be fun. And I hope to get VIP tickets, too. This way I could talk to you before the show. And you get a book, Teddy and Booker T. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It was always been hands-off. Hands-off in terms of sanctions and hands-off in terms of any limited military action to discourage this behavior. Second thing, the Biden administration made a statement weeks ago that if you're going to go into Rafah, make certain that you take care of the people and move them out of there and make certain there's humanitarian assistance. Israel agreed with that. There's pressure on the Biden administration now about Rafah, and they have declared that Israel should not go into Rafah. And the implication is, if they do, we're going to pull some support. I mean, that is absolutely staggering that we have come to that position. And the lack of moral clarity on a part of this administration is appalling. I mean, you have to come to grips with the very nature of the evil that we are fighting here.
That is General Keane over with Brett Baer last night. And that's what I feel like. He's always the voice of sanity, knows more than everybody else. Put out the Institutes of Study of War. Any conflict, they knock it down. They give you what's happening, and then they'll knock it down to a summary at the end. You got to get it. And what he's saying is, are you kidding me? You know Hamas wants to kill every Jew. You know that Hezbollah is combining the bomb in the north, Houthis bombing over in Yemen, shutting down the Red Sea. So they have to handle the enemy. And while they're about to finish them off in a bloody battle, then they will lose IDF lives. They're saying, no, don't do it, because he's worried about Michigan and he's worried about Minnesota. But you know what the narrative is? And the question from Univision yesterday, is Netanyahu doing this because he knows once the war is over that he's going to lose his job? I mean, is there anything more cynical and sick than that? You lengthen a war, people to die, your people to get shelled in order to win an election. He's already 80 years old. Excellent chance he'll lose this one, come back and win another. He's done it before. The security element alone is going to make him susceptible. But to think you lengthen a war, he should just go into Rafah, forget about having everybody weigh in, forget about the U.S. greenlighting, just go in and finish him off. And when they kill Sinwar and all his buddies, if they don't escape, people will understand it's necessary. They will get over it, in my view. There's no doubt about it. And then we'll worry about home. Listen to this guy, Tariq Bazzi, in Dearborn, Michigan. Through the translate, by the way, it's El Quds Day, and they're having a rally. El Quds is the security evil force that is really the security force of El Khomeini over in Iran. As evil as it gets. They torture women who don't wear their headdress right. So listen to him, cut 16.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
So they were chanting death to America. Now you think, well, that's just one crazy guy. No. Cut 15.
Understand what these slogans mean. From the river to the sea means the absolute annihilation of the Zionist regime. Israel shar mutlak. It is absolute evil. It is a cancer in the Middle East and in the world. There is no way to deal peacefully with such an entity. There can be no two-state solution when you have a Zionist aggressor that knows no limits, a Zionist aggressor that will steal land and slaughter children, and that will take pride in doing such deeds.
That's this lunatic in 2021. Then you saw him last weekend here in 2024. If the FBI isn't following this guy and tracking everybody who showed up to hear his rantings, then you shouldn't just disband the FBI. Because he's telling you, listen to me, you hate America, I hate America, let's destroy America. And by the way, Joe Biden, you're not getting my vote.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Don't change your station. I am so glad you're listening right now. Andy McCarthy standing by. Martha McCallum will join me in studio. It's already been a busy show. A lot going on. President of the United States going to do something he rarely does. Yesterday, he talked to Univision to try to get the Hispanic vote by talking tough at the border. I don't know. His whole life is upside down. And number two, talking tough on Trump, too. And number two, he's the Japanese prime minister and the president are going to have a joint presser in about 90 minutes. So we might actually get a question in. Now, it's a legitimate, some legitimate questions. I mean, you got Japan under threat from China, no doubt about it. They're going to start getting offensive weapons, buying Tomahawks and other things from us, first time since World War II. They're going to actually spend 2% of their GDP plus on the defense. Now, seems to me, a good business decision for a capitalist country would be to expand your industrial base big time. And for countries that can write checks, I think the Philippines can do that. Japan can do it. South Korea can do it. I know Germany can. France can. Israel's certainly going to need them. These Eastern European countries that want to modernize and get away from the Soviet era weapons, they could buy it. If we do this, it'll be for profit and we'll arm our allies because our enemies are all on the march. Let's bring in Andy McCarthy. Andy, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good. I was just talking to Eric Trump on camera, and he basically said, and maybe we'll pull it up, but he basically said, listen, the former president is going to be in court 5 to 6 weeks, four days a week, 6 to 8 weeks. 4 days a week, 8 hours a day. Is he right?
Yeah. The way this works, Brian, I think that we've been I've tried to warn people about this because we got the in-court view of former President Trump that we've gotten over the last year is in connection with these civil cases. And in civil trials, the defendant does not have to be present. There's downsides to not being present, but there's no requirement that you show up for the trial. In a criminal trial, it's very different. The technically speaking, any constitutional right you have, including the right to be present at your own criminal trial, can be waived. But what typically happens in the criminal law is if the judge allows the defendant not to be present for a day or two, and then the defendant gets convicted, the defendant habitually will claim on appeal that his right to be present at trial was denied. So in order to avoid that happening, judges require criminal defendants to be present throughout the trial. And usually it's a condition for people who are on bail. I don't think President Trump got bail set in the New York case. No one gets bail set in New York, right? But often if bail is allowed, it's a condition of a person's release that you show up at all court proceedings.
So I'm sure you saw the scene of Alan Weisenberg. I think he's 76 or 78 years old. The CFO being led right back to Rikers Island. Meanwhile, the cover of the New York Post today, Andy McCarthy, has six Venezuelans who were looting a Target and Target store. When cops showed up, they beat up the cops. Five of them are out without bail. At the same time, we take the CFO of the Trump Organization, who they say used some of his money for his grandson's school and maybe a car service here and there. I mean, if you want to see an imbalance of justice, do you need a better example?
No. And in fact, I think, Brian, what we have to start taking note of, especially people like you and I who are New Yorkers at heart, have to sort of take account for this. But what we have here is not a legal problem. It's a cultural problem. Progressive left philosophically believes in using legal processes and administrative processes in a punitive way against their enemies. When you have a rule of law society, that kind of stuff is very unpopular because we believe in equal protection under the law. But if you have a progressive city, for example, like New York, you can get someone like Tish James running for AG who says, elect me and I will use the powers of my office against our political enemies. And she gets elected in a landslide. So it's terrible. It's unfair for people who believe in the rule of law. It's a disgrace. But the people who are running New York are not those people.
So right now we know Alvin Bragg feels as though that he and his staff and the judge have successfully parried all Trump's attempts to delay this trial, remove this judge. Are they out of chances here, unless there's another huge document dump at the last minute?
Yeah, they're going to trial on Monday. I mean, it looks to me like this judge is very determined at this point to go to trial. I thought this about a month ago, Brian, when he initially moved the trial from March 25th to April 15th, when Trump got all those documents from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan. At that time, what the judge told them is he was putting the trial off till April 15th, but he warned the lawyers and he warned Trump, you know, don't make any plans. Don't think that we're putting this off forever. And you have to come to the court before you take another engagement in another court. And that was because he wants this trial to go to trial. He didn't want them to go down to Florida and have Judge Cannon set up a different set of hearings that Trump would have to be at, where he'd have an excuse to come back and say, I can't go to trial now. So the judge warned them that the trial date was not going to be allowed to slip that much. And it looked pretty definite that he was determined to go to trial.
So he's going to be doing it. And I'm just looking at some of the jury questions. If you were defense, knowing that you're in hostile territory in New York, I'm looking at some of these questions. Have you, a relative or close friend, been a victim of a crime? Have you, a relative or close friend, ever worked for any corporation or organization that is owned by Donald Trump? Have you, a relative or close friend, who volunteered any Trump organizations? Question for respective Judge Hunchway trial. Have you ever considered yourself a supporter or belong to any of the following? Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, Boogaloo Boys, Antifa, Three Percenters. So they don't ask you who you voted for, however. But if you were Trump and you had to, if you were representing Trump and you had to pick a jury, where can you find with a question that person that might be open to finding him innocent?
I think that the politics so infuses this trial and this whole process in New York that Trump is probably going to want a jury that looks like Trump supporters, because they're, you know, they're more likely. Let's remember, the prosecution, even with all of its obvious advantages in New York, is always at a disadvantage in a jury trial, in the sense that in order to win a conviction, you have to get all 12 unanimously. For Trump, it would be a win to get a hung jury here, which means you just need to get one. And obviously, to be acquitted is, you need 12. That's a high order task. But I think if I'm Trump, I'm looking for the average New Yorker who is apt to be a Trump supporter, rather than, the kind of New Yorker who is apt to be a Trump hater, which, is easy enough to identify.
Yeah, everyone in New York City. Let's work our way backwards.
I don't know about that. You know, I tried cases in Manhattan for a long time. Now, admittedly, I haven't done it in over 20 years, and Manhattan has changed. And when I was in federal law, so we were drawing a jury panel not just from Manhattan, but also from the Bronx and Westchester County. So that's a slightly that's an importantly different jury pool. But there are a lot of Trump supporters in Manhattan. There's a lot of working class people in Manhattan. There's a lot of people in Manhattan who don't like the elites of Manhattan. Remember, Alvin Bragg won his election to be DA, but those are low turnout elections, Brian. I think, what did he win with, 70,000 or 80,000 votes in a borough of over 2 million people? Mm-hmm. So you can't just assume that because the activists who come out and vote in elections in progressive cities because they're very politically active and right. they're overrepresented in elections. It doesn't mean they're overrepresented on juries.
Just real quick, can I take a look at what these other cases? Where do you know that Georgia is at right now?
I think Georgia is on the slow track and will not be tried this year. It looks like the judge, I think the appellate court, is going to permit an appeal of the judge's order not disqualifying Fannie Willis. And if there's an appeal of that, that's just going to slow everything up. And then you run into the problem, Brian, of there's only a limited number of days in the calendar, and he's got these other proceedings. So I don't see how they slide that case in.
Okay, we have Jack Smith extremely frustrated on the documents case, and we understand this judge, he might have an option to go over Eileen Cannon's head and try to get her removed?
I don't see how he can do it. He's got no basis to get her removed at the moment. Now, he's got a couple of issues that he might be able to figure out a way to do pretrial appeals if she rules against him, but she hasn't ruled against him yet. I think his major frustration right now is of all the cases, this is the strongest one against Trump. Now, Trump's got some advantages down in Florida because it's a better jury pool for him. It's obviously a better judge for him, but it's a very tough case against him. And I think Smith's problem there is one of his own making. He overcomplicated it by bringing 32 classified information counts, which he shouldn't have brought. He should have tried it as a straight obstruction case, and maybe he would have gotten to trial faster. But, you know, he made his bed, so his problem right now is that he's stuck with the choices he made.
Now, the January 6th case, what's holding that up?
The Supreme Court. Yeah, well, there's two things, really, I think. The immunity is the major holdup right now because the immunity appeal is in Trump's own case. And in federal law, you only litigate in front of one court at a time. So since the Supreme Court has jurisdiction over the case right now, Judge Chutkan, the trial judge in Washington, can't do anything. She can't hold hearings. She can't do anything that would affect the record that the Supreme Court's going to rule on. So until the Supreme Court rules on the immunity, all of the pretrial work there, all the hearings, all the stuff that has to go on, including the jury questionnaire that you just read from in New York, they have to do one in Washington as well. None of that stuff can get done, and that takes weeks and weeks to get through. And they probably won't get the case back until June. So that's going to, you know, they have 2 or 3 months of pretrial work to get done once the Supreme Court rules. The other important Supreme Court case, Brian, is the obstruction case in the Capitol riot proceeding. So Trump is not a defendant in that one, but it involves the same exact obstruction statute that makes up 2 of Smith's 4 counts against former President Trump in Washington. So depending on how the Supreme Court rules on the way the Justice Department has been exploiting that statute, that could require a major surgery on Smith's indictment.
And lastly, I'm watching some of this hate speech, in my view, in Dearborn, Michigan. I want people to listen to this, and I'm wondering what's acceptable and what is free speech and what is hate speech. Cut 16.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Death to America, translated, death to America. This guy's done it before in 2021, similar statement, similar disdain for the country that he's in. How long does he get away with this? If you are the FBI, are you all over this? Who shows up, what they're saying?
Well, look, this is very much reminiscent of the terrorism case I tried in the 90s.
I know.
Right? Where you had death to America type rhetoric, but we were able to tie it by evidence to jihadists who are actually plotting attacks against the United States. So the tripwire in First Amendment law is, as far as the criminal law is concerned, is incitement. So if you can show that these incendiary speeches are part of a plot where they're trying to drive people to do actual attacks on the United States, you have the beginnings of a criminal case. But I'm going to let me just say this is like another hobby horse I've had for only a quarter century. But, you know, the other context here that's important, Brian, is immigration. You know, it's one thing to say Americans have the right to say very provocative, very ugly things under the First Amendment. Hate speech is not actually a prohibited category of speech. Incitement is prohibited. But it's quite another thing to say that we have to tolerate people coming into our country who hate the United States. And I've been saying for, you know, since we've been dealing with jihadism, which started in the early 90s, long before 9/11, that we got to do a better job of vetting people who come into this country who hate America. And at the moment, we're not keeping anybody out of this country. So they have an open door. All the people who want to do harm to this country have a much easier way to get in here now than they've had before. And the law enforcement people are overwhelmed because they have enough trouble enforcing the law, especially in these progressive areas where you have these prosecutors who don't want to prosecute. Now we're flooding the country with people who actually hate the country.
It's nuts. I mean, have you ever seen such idiocy? I mean,
no.
It's just so dumb. That's what people are saying. This is what I get from people. It's not so much, well, I don't like Obamacare like we used to discuss. Social Security should not be privatized. We used to discuss it. Too much money in the military. Not enough money in the military. These are old debates that you could have an interesting conversation. The most prepared person wins. But now the question is, should we let everybody in that walks to the border? Should we give them free health care in California? Do I give them the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City? Do I provide them three meals a day and a debit card? I mean, this is just so stupid. Final thought?
Yeah, well, you know, look, they make fun of Trump, all these pointy-headed, brow-furrowing intellectuals when he says stuff like, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. But the fact that that's a simple sentence doesn't mean it's untrue. If you don't have borders, you don't have a country. And if you're not going to enforce your borders and you're going to let people who hate the United States in, you're buying all kinds of problems, and we're seeing it.
Andy McCarthy, you're the best. And sadly, we're going to need you so much now because this court's as much as you need the Newt Gingriches of the world, you need the Andy McCarthys to unwind the court cases around the politics. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Brian. When will you get my bill?
I know it's going to be huge. Just bill me at the end of the year, all right? That's all I ask. Just one bill. No quarterlies. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So Martha McCallum's here. We're going to have a full half hour, but we just got a minute or two here. Martha, we were just talking about the debates. A letter's going out to both candidates. America wants to debate. It's overwhelming Democrats and Republicans. I think they have to do it, don't you think? And is RFK in it? I mean, he just got Nebraska.
I think he should be. He's actually going to be on our show today, so we'll ask him about what he thinks about this proposal. I cannot imagine living in a United States of America where there is no debate ahead of the presidential election. I think that would be a real travesty. President Trump, the former president, has said since he was turning down our primary debates that, well, you have to do the big one. You have to do the head-to-head.
Right. And he has an empty podium with him a lot. Just to push
exactly.
I bet you they do it.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. And it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch.
And that is the NPR, one of the editors, been there 25 years, and it sounded like what we've been saying and frustrated that people weren't getting it, that people were not giving Trump a legitimate shot. And to the point where he felt as though he had to come out and speak to Barry Weiss about it, write a column in the Free Press about it. And his name is Yuri Berliner, NPR editor. I just can't get enough of this whole interview.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fascinating.
It's what we've been talking about, we talk about the vaccine. We talk about the origin of the virus. We talk about the Russian hoax. We talk about the laptop. He's saying, I'm in newsrooms and they're not even entertaining it. And some people said, we're not going to talk about the laptop because it will help Trump at NPR.
Well, unfortunately, you know, I always go back to Peter Strzok, you know, at the FBI saying it's not going to happen. We won't let it happen. Right. And that notion became pervasive from Crossfire Hurricane all the way through all of these arms of the media. This is a taxpayer funded entity, NPR. And it does have, as he said in the beginning of his piece, it has a good history of being much more fair and looking at both sides of these stories. And here's a person who, you know, wants to be a real journalist, wants to expose people to all ideas around the COVID origin, for example, and was shut down. And I think that it's interesting. I mean, you're seeing people, obviously, we've been covering these whole stories for a very long time. And you see people gravitating to places like Free Press where they want to do the same thing. Matt Taibbi, Michael Schellenberger, you know, this man will have, he's still at NPR. I don't know if he's going to stay there or not. But yeah, Barry Weiss started the Free Press and, you know, very famously left the New York Times and said that Twitter was dictating, was the editorial voice of reason at the New York Times. So I am encouraged by this article and by his interview with Barry Weiss. I think this is a good sign. I think there's a breaking open of some of what's happening. I really do.
And the thing is, you notice he's not saying he's not giving his opinion. He's not saying Trump should have won. He's just saying, why aren't we approaching the stories fairly? And then we used to be able to look at the nightly news and say, by the tone of that story, the length of this story, the placement, you know where they stood. Mm-hmm. But now you're like, we're not doing that. 51 intel agent says it's Russian fake and that laptop is not real. And Joe Biden can just say, look into the camera and say, yeah, it's not my son's laptop, when you know damn well it's your son's laptop. You might even have seen him holding it. And all you do is ask him to know. So he was totally comfortable lying. I want to play one more cut from him. Cut 23.
And for us, you know, I think a lot of newspapers, you know, use documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly, a lot. I think I counted 25 times. You know, and in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, yeah, Russia, you know, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, you know, I think we sort of went to sort of the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Mm. Like, you know, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
And now when they're cutting out of his speeches, when he's a candidate, you wonder if anything's going to change. When Ronna McDaniel can't get a job because she's too associated with Trump and January 6th, you wonder, is anything going to change? You know, CNN dumps out of his speeches all the time. Rachel Maddow says, is he not, if he wins, are they just not going to take it?
Yeah, I mean, he started this piece also by just pointing out that people are pulled to places that just constantly reinforce their feelings about things, right? And that if they wanted to maintain their integrity, they needed to point out that they had been wrong, dangerously wrong on the Russia collusion narrative, that those FISA warrants were used to root out people who were connected to foreign sources in order to get away with using that form of intelligence gathering. It was so deeply, deeply destructive. And he's pointing out, basically, he realizes over the course of this time period that there was just a get Trump MO at NPR that was completely separate from something that has long existed to, you know, sort of shed light on issues and stories and show both sides, which is really just such a total disaster in journalism. And we saw it right at so many places.
I'll give you an example. I forgot where I read it, but over the weekend I thought of just trying to find out how that fundraiser is going Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they said it's going to be more than $25 million. Then he came out with $50 million raised. And I think it was Politico. He said, but keep in mind, Trump went ahead and told everyone to max out. So you can't go back and get him. Oh, excuse me? Did anyone ask that question at Radio City with Obama
exactly
and Clinton?
And also, like, were they shaking people down when they walked in the door?
Everything. Give it
all.
I know.
I mean, I had questions about that number initially because I wanted to know, is this number verified by the RNC? You know, because you know that the Trump folks are going to want to put a big, huge number out there that night. But it looks like those numbers do add up. So, but that's what we're doing, right? We're saying we're not just taking the number at face value. We're digging into the number. And really, when you break it down, you see there's only one category that actually can give money to legal fees, and it's $5,000 and under. So, I mean, you know, right. you don't want to just take the Trump team word for it, that it's this huge, enormous number. You want to figure out what it is, really. So that's what we're trying to do here, and I think that's what Yuri Berliner is trying to do here.
And I think just, like, listen, it's an unbelievable number. Well, there's twice as much cash in it. Yeah, well, they just regrouped. RNC is on a bit of a roll, but they only got half as much as Biden. Point out that in 2016, he was even close to Hillary Clinton, but it didn't matter. I think that Trump's closing the gap.
That's what I find really interesting, Brian, just quickly. 2016, he had less money by a long shot than Hillary Clinton. In 2020, they talked a lot about breaking all their records and fundraising goals, right? And they lost. So I'm not sure how much money really matters. You're talking about two men who have long—
I know.
You know, everyone has their own institutional knowledge of these two people as presidents. And I think that's going to be the strongest force in this election.
So Governor Sununu came on with it yesterday. So this guy Paulson, I forgot his first name, John Paulson?
Yeah, John Paulson.
John Paulson was a big Nikki Haley supporter. Now he's co-hosting an event for Trump. That is newsworthy because people say that Trump has made no effort to get the Haley supporters. And he said, if you support Haley, I don't want your money. Clearly, that was a moment that he has taken back or gone past. And Governor Sununu, who you know is the biggest advocate for Nikki Haley and said, don't elect Trump. But he said, if Trump gets the nomination, I'll move for him. Here's what he said to me yesterday.
Trump's going to be successful because of Trump, not because someone endorses him, right? He's his own.
But does he need Nikki Haley's people? Does he need Nikki Haley?
No. No, he doesn't need Nikki so much. I mean, Nikki can do what she wants. She's independent. She's smart. But most of Nikki's voters are going to come over. I mean, they really are, because it's effectively a two-party system. This third-party stuff isn't going anywhere. And if you tend to lean Republican and you choose not to vote, you're voting for the Democrats. Mathematically, that's how it works. You're giving the Democrats what they want. So folks are going to come out and understand that these issues are real, they're serious. And I think at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the time heals a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of time between now and November.
And I even mentioned to Eric today, because Eric Trump came on, I go, listen, I know you guys don't like Sununu, but you should hear him yesterday. But he's not changing. He said, if Trump gets the nomination, you heard him on CNN, oh, Trump gets the nomination, I'm voting for Trump. Really? You just said, Mary, he goes, he's better than Biden. That's just it. He goes, I'm a Republican. I fight it out. But those are the way they used to do it. John McCain and W, remember?
Absolutely. This is the way that it works. And I was interested in hearing President Biden in the Univision interview. He said, you know, they're all terrified of Trump. Trump has such a hold on the party. They, you know, nobody will buck him. Nobody will. And I think back to the night of the first debate that we did. There were, I think, 9 candidates on stage for that first debate who ran against former President Donald Trump. And, you know, this is the way the process shook out. And what we saw in state after state, the voters were supporting the former president. That is how the process works, right? And we asked everybody, would you support the candidate? Yes. They all said yes, right? Some of them haven't. Mike Pence has not. You know, it's we'll see what Nikki Haley decides to do. She may be holding her cards close to her vest. Maybe she still wants some sort of negotiation. I don't know that for a fact, but we'll see.
So Ron Klain spoke out, and I always find it interesting. The first time I noticed this, but you're more experienced at this, Martha, is that when people want to talk to Trump, they hop on television when he was president. Now it seems like David Axelrod is doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then Ron Klain yesterday, he said, enough of seeing the president in front of bridges. Every other day he's with infrastructure, with bridges. Bridges are fine, but that's not what people care about. What's a bridge? He wants to see him in a grocery store. He wants to see him where other people are at to experience what they experience. People don't relate to a bridge. And I'm thinking, not only does Ron Klain close to him, I thought he was still having a role in the campaign. Is there a sense that this frustration, Obama talking to Jeff Zients because he sees problems? Then I read this political story today as they set up a huge machine. But what is the truth? Where's the truth here?
Look, they're enormously worried, as they should be. David Axelrod has been consistent throughout. Okay.
Yes.
David Axelrod, when Hillary Clinton was the candidate, when Biden was still running, he said he was like Mr. Magoo wandering around on the debate stage. That's years ago. That's 2 elections ago. He, you know, it's quite clear there's a lot of tension between the Obama and Biden teams. They didn't want Joe Biden to be the candidate. Now he's the candidate again. And so obviously this is a deep source of consternation for them, and they're getting more and more nervous all the time. But what we are seeing in the Black and Hispanic vote, I can't really talk about this enough. You're seeing a 20% swing in the vote for Hispanics from pro-Biden to pro-Trump, okay? That is enormous. I don't know what group you look to make up that number. And the same is happening with the Black vote as well. What you're seeing is people are voting based on how they feel economically. Do they feel safe in the country? Do they trust that we have a legitimate, you know, national security program that helps at the border? He's right. Ron Klain is right. President Biden should be talking about these issues, clarifying them for people, telling them that he understands what's going on and here's what he's right. doing to fix it. I mean, I realize it's late, but if he doesn't address these things and he tries to go all in on, you know, Trump is like the demon of democracy. I just don't think that's going to work for him. Like
Martha McCallum, our guest, her show starts at 3:00. But what I think is so interesting is that they keep on mocking Trump by saying every week was infrastructure week and it didn't happen. You know the main reason it didn't happen? It was they had a Russian eruption almost every time he made an announcement. Mm-hmm. And now we know all that stuff wasn't based on anything. And just to take another step back, as crazy and as ruthless and as brutal, the worst, the demonic character of our generation, Vladimir Putin is, when you start adding things that he did that he had nothing to do with, so because you don't like the president, that he infiltrated our election, collaborating with the president in order to affect our foreign policy and domestic policy. And he's saying to himself, not really, would have been a good idea, but he clearly didn't do it. Now, think about how he poisoned the relations. So what they tried to do, and it wasn't successful, is restart relations with when Barack Obama became president and with when Barack Obama became president and with Joe Biden. He wanted to reset relations. It was an epic fail. And maybe it would have failed with Trump. Maybe it wouldn't have. But it was stopped because people didn't want to believe that he won an election. And think about how evil that is. And when he was behind in Helsinki, the behind closed doors, and they were meeting, and he said, you know, I didn't, you know, I did this, this, and this, but I didn't do all this stuff they were saying. He goes, yeah, I looked in his eye. I didn't believe him. Well, it turns out, I don't know exactly what they said, but to a degree, Putin was actually saying, I didn't do all this stuff. We didn't meet. You didn't promise me.
They didn't have to.
Yeah. You didn't promise me a penthouse and a building that you had to build in Moscow where communists love luxury. We all know that. Yeah. With what money? Then a chain and what? A pineapple and a potato for it? So a lot of that stuff, think about how we were undermined by politics internationally.
You're right. I mean, the communications department at the White House was so enormously frustrated back in those years because every week they would be like, okay, this is infrastructure week. This is, you know, education week. They had all of these plans that they wanted to roll out. Sometimes the president himself stepped on their plans with
Absolutely.
Various things and undermined where they wanted to go. So that was a frustrating experience for them as well. But, you know, what I'm struck by when you talk about Putin and you think about his influence on our politics, it can be so subtle and easy. It doesn't have to be that orchestrated. All it needs is a suggestion and the media to light a match to it, right? And do all the work for him. They did all the work for Putin. He didn't have to build the kind of structure that he was accused of building, because all they had to do was just, you know, light a match of anti-Trumpism that really took off. But I keep thinking, Brian, about the early days discussion that Biden had about Putin invading Ukraine and that Biden had after October 7th, and how he wanted to stand strong on behalf of those two entities of Ukraine. And now we have a war in Europe and Israel and the Middle East. And all that is just sort of like, it's like it just got a wet blanket thrown on top of it. And we went from hearing about the divisiveness in the West Wing over Israel. They won, right? I mean, the protesters in the West Wing and at the State Department
winning.
And at college and on college campuses who are pro-Hamas, it appears from what we're hearing from the president now that they won that battle.
And we'll play that when we get back, because that's what he said in Univision. He's like basically just condemning Israel. I didn't hear one word about Hamas, the evilness that is this organization.
I backed Israel my entire career. That's all disappeared.
This subterranean terrorist group that puts the Palestinians on the surface to take the battle while they refuse to fight. And they sit in one city, and he's warning Israel, don't go into that city. Oh, don't let them win? Are you insane? What has happened to our foreign policy? Martha McCallum tells us exclusively who's on our show in a moment.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I mean, I have to say, Karen Dupiche, our wonderful makeup artist, when the earthquake was happening, she put her coat on and she was like, Jesus is coming.
I'm out.
I'm leaving. We've got a solar eclipse. We've got the earthquake.
Down the
she ran down the hallway.
The rapture is here.
The rapture's here. And then also I learned that the cicadas are coming.
Cicadas.
Cicadas.
Although I love
for the first time in
cicadas,
like
cicada.
Two different kinds of cicadas are coming.
The good cicadas and the bad cicadas.
But for the first time in many, many years.
No, every 17 years this happens.
Well, that's not what I read, but maybe, you know better. All those things together would maybe lead one to believe that, you know, either climate change exists.
That's more
or something
point.
Is really
or the earth is returning.
Earthquakes are not at the mercy of climate change. It's underground.
No.
It
happens.
And the eclipse, they've known about the eclipse coming because eclipses happen, and they actually can say when these things are going to happen. So all these folks who are saying, you know, it's a
all right,
sign.
So Whoopi Goldberg is the voice of reason. Martha McCallum here.
Goodness. my. And you can hear everyone around going, no, no, no. Like they're trying to jump in. I did. You know, some research when we covered the eclipse the other day, the earliest reference to an eclipse was from like 3300 BC in Ireland. And they found these, you know, ancient writings that basically said the sun has been eaten. You know, the planets move around and we've got it figured out. I'm sure they'll figure it out in a much more broad way over the next thousands of years. But there's no correlation whatsoever with an eclipse and the climate change.
And it's not the end of the world because we're still here.
Exactly.
Now, if the world does not end and your show goes off at 3 o'clock.
If the world doesn't end before 3 o'clock, we're going to talk to RFK Jr. We're going to get his thoughts on Cornel West, who is announcing his VP candidate today. You know, these are interesting players. You know, that's how you get on the ballot. Precisely. You have to have a VP candidate. That's why Kennedy announced his early. There's some pushback from Ro Khanna. He wants him to dump her from his ticket. So we'll talk to him about that coming up. Also, Clay Travis is with us. We have a great lineup today.
Martha McCallum, we're going to be watching at 3. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.